This is PodTech News. I'm Catherine Girardeau. The future of the information highway is in the government's hands again today as the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee prepares to vote on a far-reaching telecom reform bill. Republican Senator from Alaska, Ted Stevens, chairs the Commerce Committee and is pushing for the reform. Stevens' bill would allow broadband providers such as Verizon and AT&T to put a two-tiered pricing structure in place, which would charge content providers higher fees for providing faster broadband access to their customers. Democrats are fighting for amendments that would include so-called network neutrality provisions. These would force network operators to treat all traffic on the internet equally. Publishing mogul and former Republican presidential candidate Steve Forbes has been editorializing in his magazine, Forbes, and elsewhere on the issue of network neutrality. He joins us today on PodTech News. Steve Forbes, welcome to PodTech News.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
There are so many topics we could talk about. As I was mentioning earlier, PodTech CEO John Furrier interviewed you last year on your flat tax proposal. So I guess I won't get into that. You run the nation's leading business magazine. You've written two books, one on the flat tax, another one on ideas for the new millennium. Under Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush, you ran Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, so you've done some broadcasting as well. But today we're here to talk about a hot-button issue in Congress. It's being debated in Congress right now, called network neutrality. Network neutrality is generally defined as the concept that all bits traveling across the internet are treated equally, regardless of their content or of how much bandwidth is required to push them through. I wanted to preface our conversation, actually, by just reading a couple of sentences from your June 12th op-ed piece called Ominous Neutrality, published in the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
You wrote, "The net neutrality lobbyists want Congress to pass innovation-stifling restrictions on what companies like Verizon and AT&T can do with the new high-speed broadband networks that these companies haven't even finished building yet. Slapping these networks with premature, unnecessary regulations would be an inexcusable barrier to the tradition of innovation at the heart of the internet." So, Steve, you're essentially saying that putting controls on the internet would stifle innovation.
I think we, absolutely, and I think we should have learned from the Telecommunications Act of 1996, where in the name of competition, existing carriers had to provide access to would-be competitors at below market prices. It stifled investment, and other restrictions helped put us behind the rest of the world in terms of broadband and broadband access. The South Koreans and others are far, far ahead of us. If we want people and entrepreneurs and companies to invest the billions of dollars to get true broadband, then we cannot put restrictions on that in effect are price controls and that give people access for free. Most people would have it for free, but those who want special services should be able to pay up for it, just as if you want overnight delivery, you pay FedEx a fee. If you want to take your chances in the mail, you do so.
Ron Wyden, in a kind of rebuttal op-ed piece he wrote in the same publication, the Wall Street Journal, he published June 17th, he wrote that the Postal Service analogy isn't correct. He says that instead of it being the analogy that, you know, some people pay for regular mail and some people pay for internet delivery, he's saying that what net neutrality would protect is the person who pays for overnight delivery from having it take 5 days for his package to be delivered because the person at the receiving end, like a website, did not pay for receiving that delivery. How do you respond to that?
I think he's creating something out of thin air in the sense that if you want to say, let's say you want a movie. You want a movie service, and that takes up a lot of broadband, but you're willing to pay the fee to get it, then you'll get the service. It's not just the provider who might get a fee. The recipient might be willing to pay a fee to receive a special service. So if you want a special service, you should be able to get it. But as you know today, if you want to get a video online, Most of the time, it's a pretty choppy, long, drawn-out affair. Sending photographs right now involves a lot of time because it involves a lot of volume, a lot of bandwidth. But the virtue of companies putting in fiber and capacity enhancements is precisely that if you want a specialized service, you don't have to wait 6 hours to get it. You can get it instantly, just as other countries, South Korea, can get it instantly. But in this country, we're still far behind. So again, if you want to pay up for a service, whether it's delivering a service or receiving a service, you should be free to do so.
I pay for broadband access at home because the internet's important to me, fast delivery, you know, I'm an audio person, I need to get sound, etc. So I pay my internet service provider, my broadband provider, for that. However, I think what we're talking about is a little bit different in that all the many different internet sites I go to don't have to pay an extra fee to get that content that I'm downloading to my computer from their individual websites sent to my computer with priority delivery. In other words, if I order a video from Google, I'm going to get it just as fast over the pipes that I pay Comcast for as if I were to go to some innovator in his garage who's making videos and I want to see his video. Those are coming to me at the same speed. Now, if the broadband providers are in fact able to levy fees for content, maybe the Googles of the world would be able to afford to pay. But what about the innovations that are being created in people's garages? How would individual innovators fare in this situation where only premium service is given to those providers of content who are paying premium fees?
Well, again, we have a basic service right now. But if we want to get the kind of broadband where you can have instant access to video, if you can have elaborate services that require enormous amounts of bandwidth, then companies have to be able to get the money back for it. If you mandate that they can't get a return, that they can't have differentiated services, guess what? We're not going to get the service. It's like complaining about a turnpike or a highway that has tolls. You may say, well, I don't want to pay the toll. Okay, you can mandate that the road not get built, but that means you're still going to go over the dirt road. Remember, whether it's through gasoline taxes indirectly or tolls directly, those highways are paid for. And if one of the things that we're seeing now, using the highway analogy even more, is that if you want to go at a busy time, you might pay a little more than you would, say, at 2 a.m. in the morning. Differentiate the pricing. People do that all the time. Hotels, if you go at a slack time, they'll give you a much lower rate than at a premium time. But this ability to be able to charge fees for specific services is the only way we're going to get, ultimately, lower fees, more competition, and more broadband. Because as we know, when something comes in and people get on the learning curve, guess what happens? Prices go down. And if somebody's going to charge something that is not going to be, that is way above what people are willing to pay for, competitors are going to find ways to get in. For example, there's still possibilities of breakthroughs with electricity wires. You might be able to use them for broadband if somebody comes up with an efficient way to do it. Satellites are another way. So we want this kind of investment. We want this kind of broad capacity. And you're going to see, I think, new services rise up. And who? It's like saying a highway is going to block people from using it. They're not going to do that. They want to get the tolls.
Do you see that the broadband providers like AT&T are in a better position to innovate or to encourage innovation than a company like Google?
Well, I think in terms of AT&T, if they're going to provide the pipe, so to speak, if they're going to provide the access broadband capacity, they have to have a means of recovering the tens of billions of dollars that they're investing to provide that. So it's in their interest that they generate as much traffic as possible, and that means charging prices and offering new services in a way that providers find very attractive. What Google bluntly wants is something for free. They say, put up the money, provide the capacity, but please don't charge us for access. hey, that's not right.
But aren't individuals paying the companies for this broadband access? I mean, they're certainly...
They're paying part of it now. If you had specialized services, let's use an analogy of publishing. You have certain publications. Well, let's go to the websites. You have certain information websites that don't charge you for going on, like ours, Forbes.com. Anyone can access it, no charge. Whereas Wall Street Journal, you have to pay a fee for it. Ours is entirely advertising supported, or mostly advertising supported. Wall Street Journal, they get a big chunk of their revenue from subscribers, in effect. So I think you'd see a proliferation of models, and that's what you want. And people are going to find things of doing ways of doing things that we can't even conceive of today. I think the journal model has been a failure. They made money from the get-go, but in terms of use today, we get our website, I think, gets about five times as much traffic each month as the Wall Street Journal does. And so I think our model's the better one. But hey, that's what the free market's about.
There's definitely room for different models of ways that users of the Internet pay for receiving their content. However, if Forbes and the Wall Street Journal were charged premium fees for providing video to your site faster than the competition, both your organization and the Wall Street Journal would be able to pay for that. But what about the small inventor of the next web search engine or security software working out of his or her garage? You know, if that person is putting all their money, like a startup, into developing some application that would serve or become like highly successful commercially or in other ways, how will those people's content see the light of day if they can't afford paying extra fees, as you're proposing?
Well, I think if they're offering a service that requires above average use of broadband capacity, I think in terms of getting capital to make that available, that I think would readily happen. Certainly if something is desirous, if you make a great breakthrough, not just an incremental improvement, but a major breakthrough, then people who might want to use it would be willing to pay up for it. And but again, we're dealing with hypotheticals.
Sure.
If somebody has something, no, that person now isn't denied access. What that person now, in terms of what we have today, is very much of an antiquated capacity offerings that we have today. Everyone has access to it, but in terms of sophisticated new services, the present system is unable to accommodate sophisticated services. The key is, if you're offering something or you want a specialized service, the market will eventually shake out as to what's the best way to do it. We've seen in the past you've had different approaches to an innovation, and one eventually triumphs over the other, and then something new comes along. What you're going to get with true capacity, true broadband, is you're going to have a whole slew of new TV and radio services rise up, and in terms of pricing structures, we'll probably see a whole variety of ways. There may be, for certain kinds of services, very little charges for providers. We may have others where the sophistication of it needs to have a higher price. That's going to shake out. We just don't know. Look at the rise. Just take a simple example, the rise of eBay. Who could have conceived of that 10 years ago? And that has brought about a whole panoply of problems and challenges. But if you tried to, no one could anticipate at the beginning how that thing would work out, and how what kind of rents you could get away with, and things like that. That shakes out, and even today, eBay is being challenged. So these things shake out. But to try to put in restrictions at the beginning, before the baby's out of the crib, it's to me a little premature. We'll see what challenges rise up.
I'm glad you brought up eBay, because eBay seems like the example of a startup that sort of came out of nowhere and has gotten very big. However, if eBay had had to pay a premium fee starting out of the gate, perhaps they never would have been born.
Well, but the kind of services that eBay initially offered were very basic. You didn't wasn't a sophisticated new video service, although they may or somebody else may provide that in the future when we have real broadband. But in terms of providing a basic service, eBay was using plain vanilla at the beginning.
As was everyone, as video is pretty new.
But as you know, video right now is still not nearly the quality that it needs to be if we're going to have serious video services.
Well, I think we're going to have to let this conversation rest here. I know that we had 20 minutes and we're getting near the end. Steve Forbes, thank you so much for joining me on PodTech News. I've been talking with Steve Forbes. He's president and CEO of Forbes, Inc., and editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine. He was a Republican candidate for president in 1996 and 2000. Steve Forbes, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.